injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com. Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now from Milwaukee, Peter Rickman. He's with MASH, which is the Milwaukee Area Service and Hospitality Association. Brother, how are you?
I'm doing great, Sly. Thanks for having me on.
While we're dreaming, they're scheming. So when they're busy trying not to hold elections, although the governor appears to have finally waved the white flag on that today, although God knows what's around the next corner, they've been doing some dastardly things this past session. Tell me.
Turns out that Republicans and our legislature, and I might even venture to guess why, that this is true all over the country, not only don't like political democracy, they don't like economic democracy. And just last week, in the dead of the extraordinary session or special session, whatever it is these Republicans are using to take away our rights, they adopted a bill that preempts local control on a bunch of things that would matter to working people. They've taken away the ability of cities and counties and villages to set employment standards for working people.
Okay. Give me the details.
All right. So, you know, if people could just push their glasses up their nose for a minute, they say AB 748. And I'm not going to take your listeners through the morass of the legislative process here, but suffice it to say, there's been some pretty funky parliamentary maneuvers here by Voss and Fitzgerald and company to do the bidding of Americans for Prosperity and WMC to take away the ability of local communities and working people to set employment standards. So AB 748, Sly, takes away the ability of cities, for example, to pass laws that are, you know, locally based to address things like employment discrimination or to do things like ensure that workers have fair scheduling practices, amongst many other things. This bill, Sly, also takes away the ability of cities and counties and villages to set wage standards with the businesses who contract with them or receive development.
Are these the PLAs or project labor agreements?
Well, the legislature in their infinite wisdom previously took away local control on PLAs for construction projects. Just a previous example of the Republicans taking away local control from cities and counties to establish employment standards and help working people change our lives for the better. In this bill, Sly, they took away labor peace agreements, a different acronym, LPA, not PLA.
Isn't that the Milwaukee Bucks agreement?
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. The Bucks agreement that was a private agreement between MASH here and the Bucks established some labor peace provisions. It means that workers are going to have the right to actually organize a union. You know, I'm sure many of your listeners know, Sly, unions are basically like illegal now in America when it comes to workers being able to organize and win their rights and win a contract because the law is so stacked against them. Well, a labor peace agreement is something that's, it's a contract between a union and or a community organization and an employer saying, you know, look, we're going to have a fair process. We're going to let workers decide whether they want a union or not, without the boss intimidating them, threatening them, coercing them. And we're going to make sure that there's real democracy. So when half of the people who would be affected by it say, yeah, we want a union, well, then the employer says, we'll bargain a contract. It's sort of a return to what labor law was supposed to be like in this country. And because our labor law hasn't changed in 80 years, it's totally failed to keep up with the times, a bunch of labor organizer types have been innovative in coming up with this labor peace agreement approach. The Republican bill bans cities and counties from saying, hey, you know, where we have the ability to, we want to make that a part of what happens, say, in development projects.
In a TIF district, that type of thing?
Yeah, that's an exactly perfect example. You know, it's not like the federal labor law allows cities or counties or even states to do much when it comes to regulation of labor relations. So there's a very specific and narrow set of circumstances. But even with that, the state legislature, these Republicans, these anti-worker, anti-local control Republicans, took that ability away from cities to say, where we can, we want to see this happen, because it's about protecting workers and our taxpayer dollars.
Now, it's interesting. They didn't fight what you put together, or at least publicly fight what you helped put together with others with the Milwaukee Bucks agreement. And, of course, the Bucks have relatively responsible owners. And yet, I assume that was because they needed Democratic votes to pass the legislation that got the Milwaukee Arena built, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that's part of it. I think, Sly, the reality is the Republicans are playing the long game here, and they've been playing the long game when it comes to taking the power away from working people and rigging the system in the favor of the 1%, the, you know, corporate special interests and rich folks. And so they've gone sort of up the chain. They've said, well, we're going to pass laws to take away the ability of workers' movements and policymakers and local leaders to build the next system that would actually put working people's needs first here. And, you know, I think some of the really smart people around the country who are doing work on figuring out what collective bargaining could look like in its next iteration have said, well, part of this might involve putting what would be in a union contract into something that is set at the local level and applies to every worker who's employed in a given industry. Well, the Republicans have gone a step ahead of that here in Wisconsin and said, well, we're not even going to allow that anymore. So, you know, I think they're playing a long game here, and it's time people of the left and frankly, just anyone who gives a rip about working people's lives, start playing the long game ourselves and organize for the next stage. So it's not just fighting the last battle. It's not just fighting to get back what we've lost, but it's taking a look at what we can build. So we need to beat the Republicans and the anti-worker forces at their own game, which actually should be our game, because we're the people who want to build a more just, equitable, and democratic world for working class people.
Is this legislation only affect private employers?
Well, you know, Sly, I'm going to push my glasses up my nose a little bit
okay.
here and say, you know, it's pretty complicated. It depends. This law that was passed says cities, counties, and villages can't pass laws of their own on the local level that impacts private sector workers. So, for example, the law has a component in it, this AB 748, takes away the ability of cities to pass a law that would regulate for private sector employers some of the most heinous and obscene scheduling practices, where they keep workers on edge. You know, it's a common practice in retail and food service and other related sort of service industry jobs to, you know, schedule people for 6 hours and then only have them work for three, or have them rotate their shifts without any sort of regular pattern. So, you know, workers can't have, you know, some sort of predictability in their lives, or even schedule their second job so that they make enough money to support themselves and their family. You know, cities could pass laws that outline some baseline fair scheduling practices that impact all private sector workers, say like in the retail industry. Well, the Republicans have said cities can't do that anymore. So they've taken away the ability of local communities to establish the kind of employment standards they see fit for private sector workers.
So, Madison, other communities have come up with ways to have some sort of labor peace with teachers and public employees. They came up with handbooks and worked collaboratively with unions. Are the Republicans going to try to stop that?
Well, I I wouldn't put anything past them because, you know, like I said, Sly, the Republicans are playing a long game here in taking away the power of workers. And honestly, I think this is really important for your listeners here. Sly, they've been playing the long game to take away our hope and our vision for what a better future could be like, what a more just, equitable, and democratic Wisconsin could be like for working-class people. And I think they've been really smart about not just beating us down and taking things away. They've taken away from too many people a hope that we can actually change things for the better. So, you know, when they mop up and take away the ability of local communities to establish our own employment standards, or they go after communities like Madison, and certainly Madison's not the only example, but it's a very good one, where they're dealing with public employees on a basis of decency and respect. You know, they're doing it not just because they want to take away a few thousand workers' rights and make their lives more difficult and miserable. It's because they want to beat us down completely from fighting back. And we can't let them do that. We can't let the bastards win. We can't let them stop us from fighting back and fighting for more.
You know, these rapacious forces, they continue to do this. And I love the word rapacious.
You're probably the only radio host that uses that word, and I appreciate that about
Thank you. On one show, I am going to interview Stormy Daniels, and the other, I say rapacious.
A Renaissance man.
There you go. So they have no sense that in the very end, they may be cutting off their nose to spite their face. You know, there are members of the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce that depend on people having money in their pocket.
Well, look, Sly, if we're going to leave it up to the individual capitalists and business owners and employers of America to save capitalism from its worst excesses, I think we're just going to go down the tubes, because frankly, that didn't work for a few decades here. This is sort of a collective action problem. No one decent employer, boss, one percenter, whatever, is going to save the system. And they don't have the incentive to do something to make it more decent. And so I think this actually brings it back to us, regular working people. You know, the forces of the right, the forces of reaction, the forces of corporate interest in the 1% are not going to ever stand up and just say, whoa, this is getting out of hand. This is out of control. Because if they were going to, don't you think they would have done something by now?
You know, you would think.
Only going to be people like us.
You would think. When you see retail outlets closing all over the country, you'd think they'd begin to realize that even though unemployment numbers are very low right now, people's buying power is not what it was.
You know, I'm just sick and tired of these right-wingers, these corporate interests, the 1% and the Republicans making it hard for me to have a decent family life. I had to tell my daughter today, just this morning, that we weren't going to be going to Toys R Us to look at toys anymore because that store is closing. And she asked, why is Toys R Us dying? And I couldn't just go into it, Sly.
Because honestly, the Koch brothers, hate toys.
Republicans hate children. I think we've established it definitively here. Right wingers.
Before they're born, they don't hate them. But yes, after they're born, they hate them.
First breath, then they're all about taking away their food and shelter and toys.
It's gotten to the point where you're very creative, and there are many other people that are very creative in the labor movement. What do you do now?
Well, obviously, I think that's a good question. It's the question I ponder every night as I'm falling asleep and start thinking about
trying to fall asleep.
What with the chronic insomnia, though, I do get a lot of thinking done. I think that what we need to do to win for working people again, you know, if I were to just kind of put it in a straightforward path, and there's a lot of different aspects of answering this question, I think what we need to do, first of all, is, you know, engage with workers around what it's going to take to actually make their lives better and start building, you know, something that expands this movement for living wages and workers' rights. You know, the fight for 15 in the union has never been about a minimum wage. It's always been about getting workers a wage that they can live on and an organization to have some strength and power and bargain up standards. And then, you know, as we start to build something that you know, continues to galvanize the working people of this country to demand more and to fight for more, but also expect more and have a view that they can win, we can start getting into some of the particulars. And, you know, the truth is we need a workers' movement and we need political leadership that believes that their fundamental job is to raise wages and build worker power so that we can actually win for working folks once again. It's not like we can't do it, Sly. This country built the middle class, the world's first middle class, the strongest one, and the one that expanded to more and more people in a way that others never had to grapple with. We built that when a workers' movement and political leaders were aligned in figuring out how do we raise wages, how do we raise standards, and build the power of these new workers' organizations. And so I think that's a fundamental challenge for those in the political class and for, you know, us regular, everyday working people to build that. And then, you know, it becomes something that it takes on a little bit more specificity, some more defined character in, say, a state like Wisconsin or cities like Madison and Milwaukee or you know, across the country. But I think we gotta figure out how to change things here in Wisconsin first. And you know, the truth is, Sly, what happens in Wisconsin doesn't stay in Wisconsin.
No, we know that.
So if we can build that workers' movement with political leadership, we'll change the country.
Stand by. Peter Rickman with us. He's with the Milwaukee Area Service and Hospitality Association. We just call it MASH. SlysOffice.com. Brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
We're back with Peter Rickman, SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Teachers Incorporated, the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, and, of course, our friends at the Madison Firefighters, Local 311. So, Peter, you know, over the years, we've had a lot of gubernatorial candidates who come to the unions, and they ask for their support, and they might even vote right on the issues, but they don't give voice publicly, either in their commercials or on their stump speeches, to the workers' movement and the importance of workers' wages to the economy. They hire these consultants, and if you want me to start listing some of those consultants off, I can. They hire these consultants, and they basically puree the message into the lowest common denominator of mush you can possibly imagine. It would be like having tapioca, right? They turn it into tapioca.
In contrast to the mush slide, MASH here,
uh-huh.
We're trying to get things a little bit more specific,
okay.
Fine and detailed.
Okay. So
can I tell you?
Yeah, something? You bet.
We're hosting a forum with these governor candidates, and I'm glad you're bringing up, you know, the candidates for governor, because it is time that we get some of these people to talk about, you know, what's their real plan? Do they have a plan to raise wages? Do they have a plan to build worker power? And do they actually get it? Do they understand that the fundamental job of a politician is to raise living standards, and you got to do that by raising wages? That's what we're trying to get firmed up here with the candidates tonight. There's, I don't know, 72 people running for governor. We're going to have the main candidates on a stage tonight in an audience with workers, answering questions from workers about their plans. And they're going to have to actually make their case and not just check the boxes, but you know, go beyond the talking points to get into some substance. They have to trust that working people actually get that and want to hear a real plan.
Here's what I think you need to nail them down on. Because, you know, some of them will be better than others at talking a good game there in front of that audience. Politicians are good at playing to the crowd. I think the commitment you have to get for them, from them is, how do you promise to say this publicly? Not only are you going to say this publicly, but in what venues are you going to say this publicly? Do you promise us that you're going to bring this up during the debates? Do you promise that you're going to put this in advertising? Are you going to put this on your website? Are you going to put this in literature? I think you should just nail them down on every single point.
Yeah, I'm scribbling some notes here because I think we're going to add some of those questions in about, like, will you bring this up in debates? Will you run TV ads on this? You know, that's that's part of the problem here is that, you know, as you're noting, these candidates for governor in the past have, you know, they say the right things to the audiences of working folks, but, you know, at least as they define it, that, you know, to the union leaders or activists or whatever. But they don't go out and make the case to the 80% of Wisconsinites who actually work for a living that they've got a real plan to raise them up. Because the truth is, Sly, I don't actually think that we've had gubernatorial candidates who wake up thinking about the needs of working people. I don't think we've had gubernatorial candidates who deeply identify with the struggles of the working class. I don't think we've had candidates who viewed it as their fundamental priority.
I would say the last time that would have happened would have been 1998 when Ed Garvey ran for governor.
Yeah, yeah. Last time we had a union leader.
Right. And I think Barbara Lawton was probably the same way, but certainly not Jim Doyle, certainly not Tom Barrett, and certainly not Mary Burke.
And we want to draw out of this crowded field of gubernatorial candidates, you know, who wants to be the champion of working people and can back it up not just with some nice rhetoric, but, you know, concrete action and a plan. We want to identify who the candidate is or candidates are who will make this election a referendum on how we're going to win for working people. And we've got a pretty defined view of this at MASH in terms of, you know, how we can raise standards for working people. How are we going to raise wages? How are we going to build the bargaining power of workers to lift up standards? But we want to draw out from these candidates their explanation of why things have gone wrong. You know, there's three decades plus of working people getting screwed. And it didn't happen by accident. It's not some magical thing that, you know, came down from the sky. There's no natural law of economics that working people have to get screwed. You know, we want to hear what these candidates have to say. Do they get it?
Here, I just got word of this yesterday. Here's why we should have strong unions. The United Steelworkers, Michael Bolton, John Geenan, Leo Girard, Appleton Coated Paper was on the scrap heap. They went to court to keep that business open. They got a judge to keep that business open to give them time. Well, guess what? One line open, then a second. It is now going to be at full power. Had the United Steelworkers not been pushing and pushing and pushing, that wouldn't have come back to line. Now, that, you know, that's 700-800 jobs.
You know, I had been following what was going on with that to some extent, and I knew that they were, you know, winning to get some progress. I didn't realize it was going to be back open entirely. Wow, hats off to the steelworkers, man. That is incredible.
Tom Nelson called me and said, we have the Audi Gamey miracle. And it's great. It's just a great story. But it's why unions are important. That was, by the way,
I think I missed Scott Walker's press release on that.
Well, here's the thing, and your timing is impeccable here. Scott Walker had absolutely nothing to do with this. He was ready to throw in the towel and turn the WEDEC gave up on it, helping, and it was ready to go to workforce development where they just tried to find the workers other jobs, which, you know, wouldn't have been commensurate with the ones that they had.
I mean, these sort of success stories, and again, just, you know, congrats to the steelworkers and thank you to them for their leadership. They're sort of remarkable because they stand on their own, and it's great for those workers. And, you know, the 10% of private sector workers who have a union, that's a real possibility that they can hang on to a good family supporting job with what they got. But I think this actually speaks to the need for candidates for governor or president or U.S. Senate to come up with a way for that other 90% of private sector workers who don't have a union contract to see themselves in a situation where they're not asking, well, why do they have that? But instead,
that's right.
Well, why don't I? What is it going to take for me?
Well, you know, there's a whole bunch of questions. Obviously, repealing everything the Republicans have done on workers, I think, should be done in one fell swoop if Democrats get control of everything. I think they should literally undo every one of these attacks on labor in one. They shouldn't break it up. It should be done in one fell swoop. Special session, Workers Restoration Act, just undo all of it at one time. But the notion that whoever becomes governor, even if they have a Republican legislature, they're just going to passively wait for a bill to get to their desk, I think is really missing an opportunity.
Yeah, and we shouldn't let any of the candidates just softly say, well, I'll support legislation that reaches my desk. No, I want to hear what's your plan to go around to 72 counties in Wisconsin and gin up the support and whip the votes to pass a workers' restoration act. And then to go to the next step further, you're sort of suggesting here.
It was fighting Bob La Follette, not whimpering Bob La Follette.
And the man could orate. He could speak.
Right.
I think that part of the challenge here is about making this election a referendum on raising up workers. And that means having a credible policy program, something that could actually deliver for folks, and a plan to win. And let me break that down, Sly, because, too many times politicians, sort of wave their hand and say, well, if we do this, then this other stuff will happen, and then that'll be good for folks. They say that a lot with education and training and workforce development. Well, what, are you going to train hundreds of thousands of people for jobs that don't exist? No, you got to have a real plan to turn the jobs that do exist and will exist into good family-supported jobs. So, I think about the folks at the Appleton Coated plant, and, if they had gotten that trade adjustment assistance, well, what kind of jobs would they have gotten if that plant didn't reopen? Well, in Wisconsin, where two-thirds of the jobs pay less than $20 an hour, and three-fourths of the jobs that are being created that account for, basically all the employment growth, pay less than $20 an hour, chances are pretty good. A hunk of those folks, if not all of them, would have been employed in jobs that paid not nearly as much, paid a lot less, didn't have benefits, didn't have job security.
And of course, the ripple effect. 80%
of people in our state that work for a living, most of the jobs that are available are low-wage service sector jobs. So we need a concrete plan to turn those jobs into decent family-supporting jobs, not promise one individual worker, well, if you get training, maybe you'll get into a better job.
Well,
that doesn't exist.
And you know this because you grew up in the Fox Valley. For every paper job, that supplies three or four other jobs. Supply chain.
Now, imagine if we turned the other jobs that do exist into decent family-supporting jobs. And that's why we're hosting this forum tonight. So if I could just, plug this a little bit. We're hosting, and this is an
The problem is, by the time this is going to run, the forum's probably not going to be. It's going to be in the past. That's going to be there.
Got it.
Yeah. So, but we will have another interview with you about this, because I want to hear. I want to hear what these people say. I'm sorry I can't be there tonight, but I would love to hear what these people have to say.
Yeah,
I expect a full report on that.
One of the things that we've done, Sly, in preparation for this gubernatorial forum is tell the candidates that want to participate, one of the conditions is you got to send us your plan. We want to see on paper what your plan is. We don't just want to hear the yak in front of the audience, although we certainly want to hear you talk about this in some depth with some real substance, but we want to see your plan. And in companion with that slide, we also gave to them our plan. And I'd be happy to share with you what our plan is, how we're going to raise wages and build worker power and build the next system of how workers are going to win. Because it doesn't have to be some sort of fantasy. We don't have to rely upon the federal government to come in and change labor laws so that workers can have power again. We can do it right here in Wisconsin. And I think that's what we need our candidates to take up and run with, is what's a Wisconsin solution to address this crisis of economic inequality and low wages? What's the Wisconsin solution to raise wages and build worker power? And I think the candidate that takes that sort of approach up and runs with it and says this election is about putting someone in the governor's office who's going to wake up every day fighting to get workers more of their fair share of the pie. I think if we can get a candidate who says, I'm going to be a full-throated champion of working class folks and I got a real plan to win, I think that's the candidate that's not only going to win the Democratic primary, but is going to be the candidate to take out Scott Walker. That's what we're looking for tonight in our forum with the gubernatorial candidates, Sly. And I think that's what your listeners ought to be looking for and demanding of anyone who wants their vote in August or November. What's your plan to raise wages and build worker power? Are you going to get in that office and fight for me, or are you going to get in that office and talk about me?
All right, here's the deal. In the next week or so, we'll interview you again. We'll get a report on how they did, and we'll find out what your plan is for making Wisconsin wages and workers having a greater seat at the table and some real earning wages, okay?
We're going to get into some real intellectual stuff here, Sly. This is great. You're the one place on the radio that ever talks about workers. And by the way, you're the one place on the radio that not only gives a rip about workers, but actually wants to get into some of the substance about it. And I got to tell you, I hope your listeners appreciate it as much as what I do. Thank you for doing what you do.
All right. Peter Rickman, hang on the line for just a sec. This is SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.